wonderful song is to me. Please be seated.
I've enjoyed spending some time today with you. Had a wonderful lunch with Roy and Jan, and enjoyed very much visiting with them. Spent some time this afternoon visiting with one of my favorite people on this earth. He is an elder at the Estes Church, but he and I served as elders together at the Park Avenue Church for several years. And our friendship goes back almost 30 years. And so Mark Scott and I got a chance to visit together this afternoon and enjoyed that very much as well. I want to talk about forgiveness tonight. And while that may not seem to be an appropriate or a common subject for families, the truth of the matter is that it is the key to families. Some people will say, no, the key to family is love. And while love is certainly an important part of family life, it is not the key. Some will say it's communication, and all of us need to improve on communication. It is a wonderful part of our family's existence, but it is not the key to family life. The reality is this: we are imperfect people, and we only form imperfect relationships, and sooner or later, and it's always sooner, we get hurt. And once a person hurts us, either with their words or their actions, when a person hurts us, and especially when it's a person in our family, no amount of love or communication is going to heal the hurt without forgiveness. And yet, forgiveness is never easy. It is amazing to me that we are quite capable of hurting one another much easier than we are of forgiving one another. My wife and I have been married 38 years. I've been at Park Avenue for 38 years. Do you get the math? We got married in Nashville, Tennessee on July the 10th, 1981, and moved to Memphis 1 week later. We've been married long enough that I know the hot buttons on top of hot buttons. Right? I know not only the buttons to push, I know the subtle buttons to push. And she knows mine. We've been married long enough that we know and can remember when we've hurt each other. And I have done and said things to her that I should have never done or said. And she has forgiven. And in that forgiveness, love has deepened. Communication has blossomed. But without the forgiveness, none of those other things would have continued on and grown and deepened. Genesis chapter 2, God brings a woman to the man. She is called the helper. She is to deal with his helplessness, his loneliness. And he brings the helper to her. And when he brings the helper to her, or to him, she becomes, in so many ways, not only the fulfillment, the end to his loneliness, but she completes him in many ways. And then we go from Genesis chapter 2 to Genesis chapter 3, and in just a very short period of time, we have sin entering the world. And both the man and the woman sin against God, and they sin against each other. And in Genesis chapter 3, we have this terrible story. It's a story that breaks our heart. Because when we read the story, we see in Genesis 2, him saying to her, "You're bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh," covenant language. We belong together. You belong to me. I belong to you. God has brought us together. There's this wonderful celebration. And then suddenly in Genesis chapter 3, we have God coming into the garden and they are hiding from God and each other. They mean so much to each other that they hide in separate places. And what she was designed to do to take away his loneliness, he now becomes lonely again because of sin. She blames the serpent. He blames her. Both of them blame God. And there is a severing of their relationship. They heal. They heal enough that they have children together. The Bible never tells us that they relive that experience. But unless I miss my guess, as human beings, they talked about it. Just the same way as husbands and wives talk about sin now when we sin against each other. Right? Right? We sin against each other and it doesn't go away. We talk about forgiveness and we talk about how important it is to get over it. And we talk about how we want to move on. And yet, every once in a while, it'll come back up. Which is a clear indication we haven't forgiven. Oh, this forgiveness is so, so difficult. And then you have someone like me who stands up here and talks about forgiveness and wants to talk about how important it is to forgive. And if I'm not careful, I make it sound easy and almost like if there's a problem with you if you can't forgive immediately. So can we just be honest enough with each other to say that forgiveness is not only difficult, but it takes time? Sometimes we can overlook things because they seem rather petty, and yet sometimes it's the petty stuff that just chaps our lips the most. Sometimes it's the small things that get under our skin, and it's amazing how a small thing can become a big thing because we're not ready to forgive yet. Surely no one in this audience has ever said to their spouse, when asked what's wrong, surely no one has ever said to their spouse, "Nothing." Or those immortal words, "If you don't know, I'm not telling you." And either spouse is left in the lurch of trying to figure out, what did I do? What did I say? I'm not sure. And it's a small thing. You didn't pick it up at the moment, but your spouse hasn't forgotten. This is tough. This is hard work. This takes lots and lots of energy to forgive. So let's start off here. Number one, forgiveness is hard. Forgiveness is hard. Usually what accompanies the need for forgiveness is not only the hurt, but usually there is some anger that goes along. You've been hurt. Someone said to you, someone within the family hurt your feelings in some way by what they said or did, and as a result of it, you've become angry. And in that anger, you know you need to forgive or you want to forgive, and yet the anger is keeping you, or at least at the moment, inhibiting your ability to forgive. Forgiveness is hard. Somehow that anger has to be dealt with. Somehow that understanding of how you've been hurt needs to be explored. Sometimes we do that internally, but the truth of the matter is this forgiveness is hard because the anger that's involved doesn't go away quickly just because we want it to. March 24th, 1998. Two young men in Jonesboro, Arkansas. Mitchell Johnson, age 13, and Andrew Golden, age 11. Decided that at their middle school, they would skip school that day, bring their rifles to school, and open fire. They killed four of their fellow students and a teacher. The teacher was not mortally wounded on that particular day. She died later from the bullet wounds. Her husband is named Mitchell Wright. And on that particular day, March the 24th, 1998, as he went to the hospital and got to see his wife before she died, her final words to him were something along the line of, "Take care of Zane." That was their three-year-old son at the time. "Take care of Zane and don't be angry." Wow. How could he not? Mitchell Wright gave an interview with Time magazine almost a year to the date after that occasion. One of the reporter in writing this article asked him if he had forgiven the shooters. A year later, "Have you forgiven the shooters?" What would you say? If you're honest, I think the answer might be no. There's a process involved in forgiveness, and it's not a quick one. It's hard. Mitchell Wright said in that article, he said, if the time comes, when the time comes that these young men are released from prison, I suppose I would know that I have forgiven them if I can see them at Walmart and not try to hurt them. And then he said, "I'm not there yet." In 2005, Mitchell Johnson was released from prison. He had turned age 21, and in the state of Arkansas, a juvenile must be released from prison at age 21. They went back to Mitchell Wright and asked him what he thought. What would you say? 7 years after the fact, Mitchell Wright in that interview said, "I'm still working on forgiveness." Now, before you say, "Well, he should have gotten over it." Really? You ever been in your family where it was the bar of soap that was left that wasn't in place when it should have been in place, and you're still mad over it? You should have gotten over it. By the way, I used the bar of soap because it comes from a novel. When Cholera Existed, title of the novel. husband and wife in that novel turn on one another because she didn't put the soap in the soap dish in time, and he hates her for it. And we read that and we think, oh, that would never happen. Really? We get all upset about petty things and we turn our attention away from our family in some way, and you say, no, I would never do that. Please. For 30 years, I've been doing counseling with couples, and it is amazing how petty things can get in the way of forgiveness. Forgiveness is hard. Forgiveness requires so much from you. And the first thing that it requires is that you give up your right to retaliate. That you give up your right to get even. That you give up your right to seek justice. Whoa, that's hard. Secondly, forgiveness is not only hard, forgiveness hurts. The reason it hurts is because you cannot begin the process of forgiveness without some really hurtful conversations. Listen to me carefully. When you are sinned against, the person who sins against you may or may not know what they have done or said. Your job is to explain to them what they have done or said. Forgiveness hurts because it's a hurtful conversation to have. Sometimes that conversation begins with the anger, and it begins in that anger by attacking your partner or attacking your family member. But the reality is that in order for forgiveness to take place, you've got to have this hard, hurtful conversation that says, this is what you said and did that hurt me. Until you can have that conversation, forgiveness will not move forward. Not only is that initial conversation hurtful, but because it takes more than one conversation, it becomes hurtful for an extended period of time. Some people believe that if they don't say anything, they'll get over the hurt quicker. How's that work for you? If you fall into the camp of, I just won't say anything. I'll just let it go. I won't say anything because if I say anything, it'll just open up an old wound, or it'll just make things worse, or I'll get angry all over again, so I just won't say anything. And the result of that is, not saying anything, you grow bitter and resentful and more angry. You have to have some hurtful conversations for forgiveness to progress. Forgiveness is hard. Forgiveness hurts. And I've already alluded to this. Forgiveness is a process. It takes time. Over the years, I've worked with a number of couples, or one or both, had affairs. Sometimes those situations don't turn out very well. But in the situations where the couple learns to forgive each other, it is a process. It takes quite a while. I've worked with couples who were angry with each other. No affairs, just this underlying seething anger with each other. And when you begin to question them about what's going on, their response is usually somewhere along the lines of, I've been angry for a long, long time. It's a process. And part of that process, along with the hurtful conversations, part of that process is learning how to work through the anger and learning how to to see your spouse or to see your child or to see your parent as a true human being who needs to be forgiven. I say this guardedly, but without reservation. Don't let anybody rush your process. Now, before you think, well, this has just been one great counseling session in preaching form. Yes, it has. But at the same time, it is now, I want to look at Exodus 34. Exodus 34 is in the context, obviously, of something greater than Exodus 34. It actually begins all the way back. As Billy read those first three verses, the tablets have been broken, so you keep going back. That's Exodus chapter 32. Those tablets have been broken, and they've got to be re-inscribed, and this is where we come to in Acts or in Exodus chapter 34. But in Exodus chapter 32, we have the golden calf incident. We have that time where Moses is on top of Mount Sinai for 40 days and 40 nights. People have assumed he's dead. They have, as Aaron said, given all their gold, and miraculously this golden calf has come out of the fire, and they have been worshiping this golden calf in Moses' absence. Moses comes down. He's pretty displeased with what he finds. He throws the tablets down. There are people who need to die, and they do. And at the same time, there is God who comes along at the end of Exodus chapter 32 and says, I am done with these people. We haven't been out of Egypt very long, and I am done. They have not demonstrated any kind of faith. They have been whining and complaining since we left Egypt. All I can tell you is, if they didn't believe the miraculous things that they saw in Egypt, they're not going to believe what I can do for them later on. So I am done. And then you turn to Exodus 33, and there's this private conversation between God and Moses. It's wonderful. I don't have time to break it all down, but it is great conversation. It is a conversation we're just so blessed to be able to read this kind of intimate conversation between God and Moses. And in this conversation, God says to Moses, I'm not staying with the children of Israel. I'm leaving. I will talk to you, but I will never talk to them. In fact, here's what's going to happen. This is the last conversation you and I are going to have. I will send an angel. The angel will make sure that everybody gets to where they said, because I made a promise and I'm going to fulfill my promise. But I'm having nothing more to do with any of you. And Moses says, kill me. Because if you're walking away from this and I can't talk to you, there is no way for me to continue on as leader. God says, Moses, you're one of the best guys I know. I created you and you are wonderful. Moses says, you mean it? And God says, absolutely, I mean it. I'm paraphrasing, of course. And God says, Moses, you are a great human being. And Moses says, do you mean it? And God says, yes, I mean it. And Moses says, well, listen, if I'm really that great human being, I would like to see your face. I would like to, I've heard your voice. I've seen the smoke and the fire, but I'd like to see your face. And God says, well, we can do that, but then I'd have to kill you. And that just kind of defeat the whole thing. So here's what we're going to do. You come up to the top of Mount Sinai, and we'll cut out these tablets again, and we'll re-inscribe them, and I'll let you see my back. And Moses says, deal. That's Exodus. Now we're at Exodus 34. Moses climbs to the top of the mountain again. God places him in the cleft of the rock. You know that song, right? He hideth my soul in the cleft of the rock. That's where it's coming from. He puts Moses in the cleft of the rock, covers the cleft of the rock with his hand, and walks by. And when he finishes going by the cleft of the rock, he removes his hand, and Moses is allowed to see his back. Now, God doesn't have a back, but he becomes a physical form so that Moses gets a look at the back of God and doesn't die. But what he does do is in verse 8. Immediately he falls on his face and praises or worships God. So what's the point? Well, here's God when he approaches Moses and he releases his hand and lets him see his back. This is God as he announces himself. This is the first time in Scripture where God has identified himself in such a complete way. In Exodus chapter 3, he called himself I Am. But here, he now talks about his fullness of character. And in talking about himself, he calls his own name. It's like the trumpet blast. The Lord, the Lord. It's God repeating himself. He is God. Who else can announce God except God? The Lord, the Lord. And he announces himself and he says, I am the gracious, loving, merciful, forgiving God. My love will not end. My punishment is limited, but I will love forever. Moses hears those words, and the first time in his life, he knows God in a way that he's never known before. Here's the beauty of that. When you look at the attributes of God as he calls about himself, those attributes are all positive. The punishment part is right at the end. Those attributes are all positive. We see God and we say, oh, he's one of those wrathful gods. He does have wrath, but God doesn't use that word to describe himself. He uses the word loving, forgiving, gracious, loving forever. This is our God. So when you get to the part in your family relationship where there's forgiveness needed, you have to concentrate on your relationship with God in order for forgiveness to take place. And it starts with recognizing what God says about himself. As much as I've done and said that hurt my wife, I have done and said many more things that hurt my God. And he has forgiven me. I have no desire to bring the skeletons out of my closet. Just rest assured they're there. I got them. And God has forgiven me. And I think he can forgive me. If he can forget my sin. If he can know fully what I did. And still call me his son. Then I can forgive my wife. I can forgive my kids. And I can forgive me. Forgiveness is hard. Forgiveness hurts. It's a process. But here's the reality. We don't talk about it very much, but God has anger too. Sin produces anger in God. Just like it does in human beings. And yet God's got to deal with his anger. Where is he going to put his anger? Where is he going to throw his anger? You know the answer. The fullness of God's anger placed upon Jesus at the cross. He didn't take it out on you. And he didn't take it out on you. And he did not take it out on you. Or you. He took it out on Jesus. And the fullness and completeness of his anger was poured out on Jesus, who never, ever knew sin. And he took your sin and my sin and the billions of sins that have been committed in this world before us, during this time, and after us. And he took them all, and he felt the full weight of that as God poured out his sin. And God said, "This is my anger. Watch Jesus die, and you'll see the anger of God. And watch Jesus being raised from the dead, and you will see the mercy and grace of God." We can hurt one another a whole lot more and so much easier than our ability to forgive, if we leave forgiveness simply as a human ability, a human skill. But if we understand that forgiveness came first to us from God, and we truly, truly understand the depth of our own sin. Don't sugarcoat it. I think it's interesting. I think it's interesting that we have a way of justifying our sin by comparing ourselves to other people. Have you ever noticed that? People will say, "Well, I'm not as bad as Hitler." Well, yeah, okay. But here's what's interesting. Nobody ever compares themselves to Mother Teresa. We always want to find the worst person and say, "I'm better." Let's find the best person and see if you're better. You're going to engage in comparative ways to find a way to justify your sin, then you don't understand. You do not understand what you've done. Bible says there is no one good. There is no one who seeks God. There is no one who draws near to God. That's what the Bible says. And yet it is God who has sought us. It is God who has drawn near to us. And it is God who has forgiven. And if we understand the depth of our own sin, then it becomes a part of us that we want to forgive even as God has forgiven us. Sin, forgiveness is hard. Forgiveness hurts. Forgiveness is a process. But it starts with understanding how much God has forgiven you. Paul says he was the chief of sinners. The truth is, get in line, Paul. We all are. God has forgiven much, and for much of his forgiveness been given to us, we too now turn around and share it, especially in our families. Here's what I know, I think I know anyway. I operate off of this premise. Here's what I think I know about how families operate. I have no idea how many people are here. My guess is there's a percentage of people here who are mad already at somebody in your family. You're ticked. Justified or not, it doesn't matter. You're upset. You smiled when you came in, but we know the truth. There's a percentage of you that's mad, and you're waiting to go home so you can have an argument. You're just looking forward to it. You're counting on it. And if it's not a fresh one, it's an old one. Because the process of forgiveness isn't carrying forward. Start with your own relationship with God. Recognize how much he's forgiven you. Then go home and have your discussion. It's God poured out his wrath on Jesus at the cross. Fully and completely our sins have been forgiven. But we must take advantage of that forgiveness by acknowledging our own sin, confessing with God that not only is Jesus the Christ, not only that he is the Son of God, but confessing with God, agreeing with God that I am a sinner. I am not good. I need a Savior. I cannot do this without God. When that confession is made, with that confession, we then turn our attention to wanting to represent and demonstrate the fullness of God's forgiveness. Just as he poured out his wrath on Christ, we now share in the fullness of that forgiveness in our baptism. And as we come up out of the water, we're ready, not only in forgiveness, but now we're ready to share that forgiveness with other people. Would you allow yourself to be baptized tonight? Would you allow yourself to admit the truth about your sin? Would you allow yourself the possibility of coming under the fullness of God's grace and mercy tonight? And by doing so, would you walk down one of these aisles and allow yourself to be helped tonight as you become a Christian? God's not angry. He poured it all out on Jesus. He's not angry. He's loving, forgiving, merciful, gracious. One final thing. From Exodus 34, almost every prophet that comes after Exodus 34 quotes Exodus 34. Some quote it because they recognize the fullness of God's mercy. Some quote it because they're mad at God. Jonah. Jonah quotes Exodus 34 because he's ticked at God for being so forgiving. What that does is it establishes that this phrase, this set of words about God became the foundation for how Israel saw God from that day forward. And this God is calling for you. He is calling for you to be accepting of his love, to be accepting of his mercy, to be accepting of his grace, to come to him. Would you do that tonight? If you would, walk down one of these aisles. Let's stand and sing together.